kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you. Lots to talk about. We're going to start things off. Chris Taylor, you're here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
How's your weekend?
Oh, man. It was something else. On top of, on Sunday, I got to go out and see the Metroid Metal 15th anniversary show.
Oh, you were there.
I was there. They decided to have it in Texas, of all things.
I'm so jealous.
It's their first show in Texas, and it was their 15th anniversary show as well. So
I think Grant was telling me it was their first show in 2.5 years.
Yeah, I think so. And I think I caught the one from 2.5 years ago, too. So,
which was an Egg Fest.
Yeah, I have a great Metroid Metal streak going.
Nice.
But yeah, I went and saw the show. It was fantastic. They played for a long time. Got to loan them my bass amp, and it was sounding real good. So,
oh, I am so jealous. I saw that they were performing in Texas, and I was like, oh, I wish I lived there.
Aw.
No.
I wish I lived there. Oh, wait, I do. Yay.
And you saw them.
I did. It was in Houston, too, and I hate Houston. Sorry, Houston. I love you, but I hate you.
I don't think I've ever been to Houston. I was in Dallas for VG Expo like 13, 14 years ago, something crazy like that. And I fucking hated that place.
Yeah, that's how I feel about Dallas. I was born very close to it, too.
My best memory from there was going on the highway on one of the toll booths, and you had to throw change in. So I threw the change in and it didn't work. So I threw another set of change in, and it still didn't work, and I was out of change. So I'm like, fuck it, I'm just going.
Yeah, I mean, you paid up twice the amount that they needed.
Yeah.
But yeah, it should have worked.
Yeah, their shit didn't work, so fuck them.
F a bunch of Dallas. It's almost as bad as Houston. Just kidding.
I never got a ticket or anything, so I guess they I don't know if they watched video footage or I don't know what they did, but...
They're going to get you next time you're here.
Oh, yeah. They're going to take me down as soon as I get in Texas. They're like, you have a warrant for outstanding balance.
There he is. Get him.
Yeah. I will never go to Texas again in my life. So.
Aw. Well, okay.
It's not because I don't like Texas. It's because I have no reason to go to Texas because I live in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you could go to jail. That's true. A reason to come back here, I guess, since true. They're out for you now.
Road trip.
And maybe in 2.5 years, Metroid Metal will have its second Texas show.
Nice.
For their 17th and a half anniversary.
17th and a half. That would be amazing. They just bill it as it's our 17 and a half anniversary.
I dare them. I defy them. Stemage is listening. I know he is.
Grant,
I dare
if you're
you.
Listening, do that shit. Make it happen.
Yeah.
Although, play somewhere weird, like in Idaho.
Ooh. Well, can I get to Idaho?
Like, no one would expect you guys to play in Idaho. Find some kind of rinky-dink game convention, or like Montana, something like that. Just play there.
I really want there to be a game convention in Idaho called the Rinky Dink Game Convention of the state of Idaho.
That would be amazing.
No specific city, it's just a... Just a field of potatoes.
Where at in Idaho? Oh, it's just in Idaho. I think it's the whole state.
Just follow your heart. put an ear out the window of your car and follow
the sound of Grant warming up, tuning his guitar.
Follow them.
I hear it in the mountains.
Yes.
Oh my lord! We should probably talk about games, shouldn't we?
Ah, no, I'm tired of games.
Aren't
Let's
we
just talk
all?
About Metroid Metal. I'm just kidding.
Okay, so how was their show?
It was great. No, we should probably talk about games, actually.
All right, because you have a lot to talk about. You have a healthy lineup of games to discuss.
It is beefy, sir.
It is beefy indeed.
We got the beef today.
And they're all on the Switch.
It's true. It's just because I didn't get around to the PlayStation 4 one. So we'll do that next week.
Next week. But we'll start things off with Azure Reflections, developed by Team Shanghai Alice and Souvenir Circle, published by Sony's Unties label, released August 30th on the Switch for $24.99. Now on Nintendo Switch, a side-scrolling bullet hell fan game based on one of the hottest shooting game series to come out of Japan, The Tohu Project. Chris, what is this one, and did I say Tohu properly?
I say Toho, but I don't know. I just don't know. It's just... anytime I see O and U together in a Japanese word, it tends to be just a regular O sound, but...
maybe. Like, I never know. And I butcher like, every name on this show to begin with, so it doesn't matter.
I know. Me too. But, yeah. So, let's say Toho Project. I don't know.
The Toho Project.
So, the Toho Project is, in general, a mysterious thing in the U.S., unless you're, like, a hardcore shoot-em-em-em-up like, or shmup for short, fan, in which case you may have heard of it. It actually goes all the way back to, like, the PC 88 or something like that, like, in Japan, and it's, like, I want to say there's 16 or 17 main games, and then a lot of offshoots, and then a lot of fan projects. So, this is one of those fan projects. Now, the other thing about it is that we've seen three games bearing the Toho moniker on the Switch so far, and none of them are one of those main games, which is really interesting to me. So we started with, you know, I don't remember the one. It's Toho Project 5 something. But it's like a free-moving 3D thing where you shoot bullets at the other character in a one-on-one sort of battle mode. And then they had the Toho Genko something Wanderer, I think it was, which is like just straight up an RPG. And now this one, we've got a shoot-em-up, like finally the kind of bullet hell game that Toho is known to be. However, it is not a vertically oriented shooter. It is horizontally oriented. So it is not an Ikaruga. It is a Gradius. And in fact, it is not made by the people who usually make Toho games. But as I understand, like I said, there's such a healthy amount of fan content that they basically package them up and sell them like they are just regular Toho games. So, and in fact, when you load this up and you see like the nice looking menu and like all the extras and the online ranking and you know, the collection stuff and all this other, like, you're like, this has to be like a real video game. Like, this has to be made by the people who make this. But it's just a really, really well made thing by somebody who doesn't own it. So so getting into it, basically the Toho games all revolve around this one character. She is a shrine maiden, and so she generally spends her time with yokai and spirits and, like, you know, other things. Mostly they all just appear to be other teenage girls from Japan. Lots of anime characters. This game does very little to tell you who everyone is within the context of the actual game. So, like, the first boss is just introduced as, like, an ice fairy. And then they speak to each other as if, like, oh, this is some sequel to something that I haven't played, because they're kind of continuing some kind of dialogue from previous things. And, you know, once you actually get through the game and, you know, go to the unlocked, like, character profiles and stuff like that, you can, like, read a lot more about the characters, not really so much their relationships to each other, but you can definitely tell that every boss, like, coming in it as a totally new person to this series, you can totally tell these people know each other. But the whole point of it is that basically, the short stages that where you collect power-ups and things like that, amount to the one-on-one boss fights, which is, you know, what the series is of course known for, because these bosses throw out just these multicolor, like, panoramic, like, giant kaleidoscopes of just, you know, slow moving, really bright bullets that you are meant to dodge and return. That's the whole point of a bullet hell, and that is indeed what this game brings to the table. Now, versus other Toho games, this one introduces a couple of new concepts, trying on for size. The main one, because you literally won't get through the game without using it, the main one is that actually your character can now, basically sort of slow down time to a, like, Matrix style, bullet time sort of deal, where they're shielded and they start absorbing everything that's thrown at them, no matter what it is, just any bullet gets thrown in. And, that barrier is on a timer, and if you collect enough bullets inside that barrier to do enough damage to the boss, then you can actually sort of aim the barrier at the boss and then tackle them. So it's called a Danmaku burst. Danmaku is just the word for bullet hell. And so basically each boss fight becomes where you kind of shoot at the boss for a little while, take down their life, and then try to find a good spot, because the burst doesn't go all the way across the screen. So you have to have at least, I'd say, a little over half a screen's clearance at least. At most, in order to actually reach the boss. Otherwise, you have to just start over, and it takes the barrier a little bit of time to refill. But yeah, it's basically cutting the enemy down to, you know, an acceptable amount of their life, and then, or all the way, and then collect bullets until it actually says, you know, it's called break chance. So it means you have a chance to get them with your Danmaku burst. And then you sit there, go into absorb mode, and then, you know, absorb them bullets and then run into them. And if you do well enough, you get a spirit card, which I don't really know what they do, but spirit card. I think that it's part of the unlockables thing. Plus spirit cards are their word for bombs. So I think it may give you a bomb that you can use. So that's the main difference here. And then, like, what they bring back from other games is the ability to, like I said, you know, use a bomb, which is a special move, that helps you out. This one also gives you the ability, kind of the same as the burst thing, but it's on a different timer, I suppose. If you hit the right shoulder button really quickly, if you find yourself getting overwhelmed by bullets, then you can kind of knock a few of them back and absorb them and, you know, give yourself some room to breathe, which you will need as the screen completely fills up with bullets. The cool thing about this, and like any bullet hell worth its salt, is that your hitbox is extremely small. And in fact, this game gives you the ability to look at it. If you hold down one of the left or right second trigger buttons, then your character will move slower, which makes it easier to dodge the bullets more precisely. And you can see, like, in the center of their character, like, the little heart that's the actual part that needs to not be hit.
That's cool.
Yeah. But the game is actually really generous in one sense, in that you can take a hit and get knocked back without getting knocked out. However, there's no iframes, so that second bullet will probably come at you pretty quick and actually knock you out. But you get a little bit of leeway there. You do have limited lives and continues. I think you get two continues before you have to start all over again. I went through the game in easy mode and actually managed to get through without using a single continue on my first try. So this game, the easy mode in this game is really good if you haven't played many bullet hells and you want to, like, get the experience and the spectacle without the extreme difficulty that comes with it. However, I put it on normal mode and didn't get through the second boss.
Oh, God.
So, yeah. However, the cool thing is that you can actually get through the entire game and see the ending in easy mode. So, and there's different characters, and each one has different stories, and you have to unlock the character by beating it with the last one, it seems. So each character has different dialogue that they do with the other characters, and they... I want to say they probably amount all to the same ending, but maybe not. I haven't beaten it with the second character yet. The only real caveat, even in easy mode, is that you have to not use a continue on the final two stages. So you have to get through the entire stages and beat these two six-phase bosses. That is to say, when you knocking enemies' life out. You know, they change phases. That's a typical shooter thing. So it's 2 6-phase bosses that you have to beat in a row in order to see the ending.
Oh my god.
But it's not that hard on easy mode, so it's a good thing to go for.
Nice. Well, overall, $25 on this one. What do you think of it?
Well, I mean, $25 and it's a really solid shooter. I'd say it's worth it just on that alone. People looking for like a good starter Toho game. I'm seeing from like other reviews and just like looking at the other games, I'm like, this one doesn't really represent the series so well. And I mean, as a fan game, it won't. It's really more for, it seems like it is designed for the fans by the fans, but as a bullet hell shooter that's really fun and introduces a lot of really cool mechanics that I really enjoyed, and the fact that it is actually beatable by people who are more plebeian when it comes to an extremely niche, then I say definitely go for it. Plus, I think if it's still on, by the time you have heard this, it will probably still be on sale. So it's actually less than $25 at the moment.
I don't know when the sale ends, so.
Yeah, who knows? A little $25, yes, buy it.
Sounds good.
Is good.
Nice. Next game to talk about is called The Video Kid, developed by Pixel Trip Studios, published by Chorus Worldwide Games Limited. Can't get that out. Released August 30th on the Switch, August 31st on Xbox One for $4.99. Test your skills to the max with this fun and challenging arcade-style skate game set in a retro 1980s neighborhood filled with danger. Chris, tell us about The Video Kid.
The Video Kid. So this game is extremely easy to describe in a fundamental way. It is Paperboy. It is exactly Paperboy, only you're on a skateboard, and for whatever reason, you're delivering VHS tapes without cases or anything into people's mailboxes, or windows, or faces, or just about anything else. So where this differs from Paperboy is, one, you have infinite VHS tapes, and a very fast ability to fire. Like the firing is pretty quick, so you can basically barrage the entire neighborhood in tapes in order to try and get the most points. Everything is worth points. Nothing will take points away from you. You are basically invited to go completely mad in this little pastiche of retroness. So, where the real challenge comes in, for one, is the temptation to gather money, because there's coins all up in the road, and you move basically in, instead of like doing a fluid left to right movement across this isometric plane, you move in like left lane, center lane, right lane, you know, and you move instantly between them. You can also jump, because this is a skateboarding game. And of course, if you jump like on top of a car, then you get bonus points. If you fall off, then you start the entire game over. And I say the entire game because the entire game is a single level. There's no repeats, really. Like, you just, if you get through the level, you've won the game and you can just keep going.
Nice.
Yeah. So in order to keep this single level interesting, they throw in, I'm going to say, 240,000 80s and 90s references.
Close to that, yeah.
Close to that. They throw in so much stuff. And the great thing about it is that it's not actual 80s and 90s stuff. It's stuff that will remind you of 80s and 90s stuff. It's
just close enough.
Yeah, it's just on this side of public domain. And it's just constant. It's just constantly something will be driving by, and you're like, oh, it's the Ecto-1 from Ghostbusters. Hey, it's the DeLorean. Hey, it's, who are these guys? I think this is Scarface? I don't know. Like, all the graphics are done up in a 3D pixel style, so all the characters look like they were made of Legos. So it's like, it's not quite pixelated, it's not quite 3D, it's somewhere in between. So like that kind of gives... 3D Dot
Heroes.
Yeah, exactly, 3D Dot Heroes, or that RPG that I talked about that I can't remember the title of now.
Nice.
actually, this one looks a little bit better than that one. But... the cool thing is that using such a minimal style, they're able to copy things in a way that it's like, have you ever seen that picture of like, it's like, try and recognize these minimal art things. And it's just like a green line, a red line, a green line, and a, you know, another green line. And you're like, oh, that's Raphael. Like, they're mm-hmm. just like super minimal like that. So like the game's really good about making acceptable cameos out of like characters that are essentially featureless. Like me and my friend actually were playing through it, and he was actually playing the game, and I was sitting there pointing out references. And you know, it took us a couple of passes to identify like Pee Wee Herman, but you know, we saw the A-Team bus van fly by, and we're like, oh well, we know what that is. And and of course, like, it's not all 80s. A lot of it goes into the 90s. I'd say that the area of reference is probably 1981 till 1995. Exactly in our age group. So this is the kind of game that you play when you want to just sit there and, like, get lost in a super twitchy. Like, it's actually really challenging. Like, it moves fast. It's randomized. And, again, one hit sends you all the way back to the beginning. So it's kind of like, just to see how far you can get. Also, you accumulate money. And with the money, of course, you purchase things in the store that that you unlock. One of the first things we unlocked, of course, is Arnold Schwarzenegger from Commando as the hero, which actually brings with it some voice samples. Every time he jumps on his skateboard, he's like, yeah, yeah. Which is totally worth $375 that we got pocket change amounts at a time.
I can't imagine how many runs you had to do to save up that much.
Well, it was my friend Kenny, the other guitarist, or one of the guitarists from Gimmick, and he was doing really good. I think he actually earned, I think his top earning was like $50 to $80 and when he got like 90% of the way there.
Holy shit.
So, There's potential to like really rake in the dough in this game, so it's not so bad. But yeah, no, it's like, it's cool. Like, the only real criticisms I have of it is that some of it's a little hasty. Like, for instance, there is I guess this used to be a mobile game or something, because when I play it on the Switch, it has a pause button on the bottom left of the screen. It doesn't do anything.
Weird.
Yeah, there's no touchscreen whatsoever, and yet there's a pause button right there. And when you hit the pause button, then it just makes a second pause button in the center of the screen to show you that it's paused. So I'm like, okay, well, they probably just didn't want to remove it. The other thing is that you have to wait a long time between deaths to start the game over. It counts up all the change, and it's unskippable, and it counts up your whole score, and it's unskippable, and then it asks you if you want to go to the store, and then you can skip it.
That's weird, because I played it on Xbox, and I was able to skip through how much you earned.
Oh, weird. Well, you can't do that on the Switch version.
That is weird.
There's a difference for you. Trust me, we tried. Like, every time he died, Kenny was sitting there, like sitting there tapping the A button.
Yeah, I was able to mash through and get into a new run in, like, 10 seconds tops.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I mean, and even then, 10 seconds feels like an eternity when you're playing a game that's this frantic.
It can, yeah. I agree there.
But, however, these things, I mean, this is something you would expect with a $5 game. What you wouldn't expect is that this game is extremely fun and absolutely worth it.
Nice. So your official verdict at $5?
Buy it!
I agree. It is a hell of a lot of fun. I love the aesthetic of the game, all the references. I've been playing through it like crazy, and every time I play through, I find something new.
Yeah, it's so packed. It's so jam-packed. And, like, I want to say it's like Ready Player One if it was good. It's just like, because it just, like, you know, Ready Player One just dumps references, just names things, right? And you're expected to be like, oh yeah, that. But this one actually, like, throws them all in as obstacles, and, like, they have some sort of function, and, you know, they're either obstacles or they help you, or, you know, and they're just all over the place, and there's so many of them, and it just makes no sense. There's no context for it. No. other than this is a video game, and we are doing this. So yeah, I really, as somebody who is very wary of being pandered to, I felt that this was extremely quality.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, next game to talk about is called Claws of Furry, developed and published by TerraHard Limited, released September 4th on Xbox One, PS4, Switch, and PC for $9.99. Punch and claw your way through 40 fast-paced levels of pure mayhem while honing your ninja cat skills in order to rescue your master from the evil claws of an unknown enemy. Chris, what is Claws of Furry?
Claws of Furry. Well, it's not so unknown of an enemy. It's just a dog riding a robot. I mean, all you're missing really is a name and a context. Anyway, yes, so Claws of Furry. It's basically, this is a brawler wherein you play as ninja cats who are drawn in like this sort of extreme, I want to say just indie game art style. I don't know what else to call it. Just like, you know, like Castle Crashers or Binding of Isaac. Like, they all have that art style that's like, you know, probably took 5 minutes to come up with and then like a year to perfect.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so you've got these kitty cats dressed up as ninjas. They use their claws. The gameplay part of it is actually fairly simple. You have a regular attack, which is just, you know, slapping an enemy with your claws ad nauseam. Then you have an uppercut move, which is more powerful and flings the enemy into the air, whereupon you can jump at them and uppercut again in order to kind of weaponize them as enemy meteorites, which is kind of cool. Actually, I wound up relying on that quite a lot for groups of enemies, because you can uppercut like 3 or 4 guys at a time and send them flying. And then you have a really pathetic distance move that I'm not convinced it does anything. Your cat literally just throws a fish at the enemy and it makes them blink, but I don't know that it does any damage because I've never killed anything with it. And in fact, when I used it on a boss, I could see from the life meter that it wasn't going down.
So, oh God.
I was like, all right, this is junk, but it's probably cool for like setting up some crowd control, if you will. Apart from that, like, so the main feature of this game, it appears that they seem to want to tout, is the fact that it's a quote unquote roguelike brawler, which that's really ticking a 2018 box at this point. It's like, is my game a roguelike? Yes. Welcome to 2018. So the thing is about it, though, is that the levels are extremely short. I want to say that the majority of them were about 2.5 full screens of that. And so the randomness, quote unquote, is like either there's a spike pit or there are 2 spike pits. Either there's a building or there are 2 buildings. And then the enemies are, you know, the little grunts and then the big guys that kind of take a lot of hits to take down, and you know, they just kind of amble around. The interesting thing about this game, though, is that in combat you aren't damaged by touching enemies, and in fact if you jump on top of them you just harmlessly bounce off their heads, which is a little annoying when you're trying to navigate a spike pit. Fortunately, you have a double jump and a bit of a dash, so you know there's ways to get out of situations. But a lot of it is just like actually just watching the enemies when you can, and when they make a move, then get out of the way. The bosses are especially like they really tell you what they're going to do. So you're actually able to strategize pretty effectively in this, which is pretty different from most brawlers. Most brawlers, you get enveloped by enemies who endlessly punch you and then you die.
Nice.
That's been my experience. But this game, you cannot die because in the roguelike mode, you only have 1 life. However, they have provided the players with a pussycat mode, which is the exact same thing as roguelike mode, except that you can die many times. But when you die in that mode, then let's say you're a few levels in, it will send you to the previous level, and then you have to claw your way back to where you had died. Life is not refilled between levels. I think it isn't anyway. I seem to keep my life up. Yeah, I seem to keep my life up pretty well. So I only noticed a couple of times. I was like, hey, oh, of course, because it's roguelike. So
yeah.
They want you to do that. And then there's an arena mode, which you have to beat the first boss in order to unlock, and it just sends waves after waves of enemies at you. And that's where I come to the next part. The fact that this game is up to four players simultaneous. So you can take on this whole thing with three of your best friends right there on the couch. Provided you have those friends and they want to play Claws of Furry. I obviously wasn't able to test this myself, but having seen some other things and, you know, all that, it looked like it would probably be a lot more fun with more people. For sure, the bosses would be really fun, having like lots of your friends bouncing up and down and, you know, doing what they can. But like the single player mode, I liked it. I thought it was really good. I was a little bit like, well, I mean, as a brawler, I kind of do want a little bit more structure to my levels, but especially for the fact that it's like you're just kind of rolling the dice on whether there's an instant death, have to start the whole game over pit. So in fact, I just spent the entire game in pussycat mode and just played it like a regular brawler.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what I found myself doing as well. I was not that good at the game, especially arena mode. I got my shit wrecked on arena mode.
Yeah, arena mode's a little more classic, isn't it? Renegade.
it just dropped in like the tough enemies right away.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, the separation between this game and a typical brawler is that you can't just overpower the enemy. You actually have to study them a little bit because, like I said, they tend to broadcast their moves pretty effectively. So in that sense, it acts a little bit more like a platformer.
Yeah.
But without platforms. I mean, apart from the enemy's heads.
Well, overall, $10 on this one. What do you think of it?
$10, I'm going to say if you like the aesthetic and you like you're collecting all of the cat pun video games on the Switch, which there are a multitude of them for whatever reason, it's absolutely a buy it. I recommend it most based on whether you have enough friends that are going to want to play this with you. Seems like it would be really fun at a party just to kind of throw on when everybody's too frustrated to play another round of Overcooked. But as a single player mission, I say there are better brawlers. But if you are into brawlers, this is not a bad one. It's just different. And I say it's worth a try.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Siggy, a fart for Melusina. Yes, a fart for Melusina, developed by Pixel.lu, published by Sometimes You, released September 7th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and Vita for $4.99. Join Knight Siggy as he runs, jumps, and battles in a flatulent quest to save Melusina, the love of his life. Chris, tell us about this one.
First off, Melusina is a topless mermaid. Like, how is that the love of anyone's life?
Isn't it the love of everyone's life?
Because she's got fish parts down there, yo. Like, jeez. I am not going to get involved in the business end of a fish. I don't care. Don't care how much I've been farting. But no. It's a... She is topless, though. Like, she's got her hair covering the bits, like that classic mermaid style. Yeah, so Siggy, a fart for Melusina? Did I say it right?
Yep, I think I'm saying it right, but...
Okay, because I have never... Melusina? Yeah, it doesn't really talk much, the game, so who knows?
It farts a lot, though.
It does fart a lot. So, what this is it is a classic... I really need to do a moratorium on the word classic. I already mentioned Ready Player One, and now it's got a bad taste in my mouth. It is a standard, a vintage standard platformer in the vein of, I want to say it's a little bit Ghosts and Goblins like, but it controls really super well. It's extremely tight, and so it cannot be compared to Ghosts and Goblins, which is a control wreck. However, the weapons are going to be very, very similar. And plus, you're playing a knight who's, you know, running off to... Actually, in the sense that, you know, he falls in love with this mermaid that he sees for the first time, and he lets out a huge fart, and then she runs away from him or swims away from him in fear. You kind of get the sense that you're maybe the bad guy in this game. But then you find out towards the end of the game that it is not you, it is Zombie Hulk Hogan. But that's spoilers. but yeah, so you jump through this game, it's very fast paced, but the weapons are very Ghosts and Goblins like. You've got your knives that you throw, you've got a collection of knives you can throw, which is the best weapon in the game, I think. You've got pieces of fried chicken that you can throw, which is cool.
Always good.
And just some other medieval armaments of various qualities. You're really just going to want to go for the knives of spread fire. The game does seem centered around a very British type of fast food. That is to say, like a food truck, food stand sort of takeaway. They call it weenies. So every stage has you get to the weenie stand at the end of the stage where you pick up your food and then you eat it and instantly fart, because this game decided, like, for I really didn't see the point of the fart jokes, like, apart from that they're just there, but, like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I got Boogerman's one of my favorite platformers because it's super brilliant, and it also uses, like, the idea of, like, flatulence and, you know, just different bodily functions and weaponizing them to a great and very creative degree. Whereas this game, it's just the farts are just there when you pick up a power up. you don't use it at all, and it's not really remarked upon even. Like, it's not, like, apart from the very beginning of the game, like, it doesn't even factor into the rest of the jokes. It's just, it's very Plock like in that he just says weird little Britishisms that, I mean, this thing has Great Britain written all over it. So if it was made by an American, then congratulations. You definitely fooled me with your Euro style dialogue. And seven language options, or however many. And speaking of Euro, holy crap, this game has way too good of a soundtrack for what it is. I love the music in this game. Like, I'm going to go seek it out at some point, see if it's available, because it's very much like 8-bit, a little bit 8-bit plus maybe, but, like, God, man, it's so good. So you'll enjoy the music in this, if nothing else. The gameplay, like I said, it's very tight platforming. It's very fun. It's very creative. The bosses are really, really well done. Each one is completely different, requires all kinds of strategies, and they get pretty up there in creativity. You do fight a box of fries. I think over a pit of, I guess it must be burning grease or something. But anyway, and it's just so well done. Like, I love the boss fights in this game. I love everything in this game, honestly. I just don't get the jokes. So yeah, it's 19 levels of that. Once you beat it, you get an ending, and the ending kind of opens it up for another playthrough, so I assume that it's a bad ending. And then you're given your percentage. Completing all the levels, I had 37% complete. So I was like, oh, that's odd. I beat the game, and yet it's 37% complete. And it turns out that you have to go through and find the Siggy power-ups. That is to say, there's an S, I, G, and I in every stage. Kind of like the Kong things in Donkey Kong Country.
Oh, yeah.
So if you find all those, which I did go back and do because I quite enjoyed this game, and that does add another element of challenge, then I finally got all of them in all 19 stages, beat the game again, and I had 67% completion. And I was like, what? I don't know what to do. And then I saw that there's actually a bit in the menu where it actually tells you that there's a third sort of pretty hidden, like, apart from the fact that they tell you in the options menu, like, they tell you three sacred artifacts to look for, and they say that time is of the essence in collecting them, so I imagine that these are power-ups that you can find within a certain amount of time, which, considering there's no real sources for, you know, walkthroughs or anything in this game, like, you really have to, I guess, go back and I'll have to go back and try and find those somehow, because I need to get that 100%, because I imagine that'll probably get me a better ending.
Probably.
Yeah. So, definitely got a lot for my $5 out of this one.
Nice. So, what is your official verdict for $5?
I'll just suck it up and play this. It is so good. I mean, you know, if you have hang-ups about, like, fart humor, it's not really there. It's in the title, it's in the intro, and it's a sound effect that is very persistent. in the game. But it's actually just a really, really good platformer with excellent music and some creative ideas and just solid all around. For some reason, wrapped up in a cheap flatulence joke.
Hey, it works for me.
It should work for everybody.
And on the music, the soundtrack is done by a musician named Sasquatch.
Perfect.
And the soundtrack is available on his Bandcamp page for Name Your Own Price.
Ah, perfect. That's going on my phone today.
And then you were correct in that it is a European developer. They're actually from Luxembourg.
Luxembourg. That's really interesting. Well, forget everything I said about criticizing the humor. I don't know how they joke in Luxembourg.
Me neither.
This is probably top shelf stuff in Luxembourg.
Is this the first? I can't think of any other games that came from Luxembourg.
Well, this must be the first. Well, thank you, Luxembourg. You made a very, very good platformer. I want to know if weenies is a real thing, too.
It might be. If we hear from the developer, I'll let you know.
All right.
Oh, boy. One final game for you to talk about is called Hacky Zack, developed by Spaceboy Games, published by Digirati, released August 23rd on the Switch for $9.99. Bounce, bounce, keep it up. You are Zack. Juggle balls, bounce off walls, and avoid fatal falls as you try to make it more through more than 100 levels of precision puzzle platforming. Collect stickers along the way to unlock optional time trial challenge levels, as well as extra playable characters who are also extra cute. Chris, tell us about Hacky Zack.
Saving the best for last. No. Okay, so Hacky Zack. So this is one of the most interesting concepts and executions of a platform puzzler that I think I've seen. So we don't see too many Hacky Zack games in video games. That much is true. You got California Games, of course, which my band gimmick covers that music. So But I can't think of any other. I think there's one other sports compilation game where you might play Hacky Zack. But yeah, this game is entirely centered around it. You wouldn't know it at first because the Hacky Zack is about as large as your character.
Holy God.
But, yeah, but once you actually start playing the game and you realize, oh, yeah, actually, this is what I'm doing. Because basically you kick the thing and, you know, it'll bounce, but you have to keep kicking it and keep it in the air. And, like, sometimes you actually have to raise it up across some walls and stuff. So the way this plays is that you start in the level, a single screen puzzle usually. And I in every instance for me so far. And you basically, you're your character, you've got your Hacky Zack, your ball. I think it actually changes in some levels too, so I don't know. I played through a lot of levels in a row in this, and then I kept going back to try and do the challenges. So I got stuck in the first few levels trying to get the extra stuff. But, so you control your character with the one stick, and move him around. And then you have a couple of options on how to proceed in terms of kicking your ball. So you have a jump button and a kick button. When the Hacky Zack is in range, that is to say there's a white circle around it, and if you're inside that circle, you can kick it. And if you just kick it, then it will just go in a trajectory of a pretty good healthy kick, which obviously will probably go plummeting off the stage. If the ball or you ends up off the stage, then you have to start over again. But it's one of those games where you have infinite lives and you immediately start over again, like, the instant that you die. So it's definitely the kind of game that's meant to be played, you know, 500 times per level. So the way you actually do precision, although you could control the kick with the stick a little bit on the left, the right stick is actually both an aim and a trigger. So you get into that circle and you, like, you know, move your right stick to the upper right, then he'll kick it to the upper right. He can kick it straight up, and then, you know, you can jump after it and kick it straight up again, things like that. So the real weirdness comes in when you factor in how the platforming aspect works. So you've got your solid platforms, which you're standing on, standard video game fare. I mean, think like Bubble Bobble or something. And your Hacky Zack cannot go through those. However, it can go through, and then sit on top of a broken, like, white line, like looks like just a sketch line But your character goes all the way through it, cannot stand on top of this line. Only the hacky sack can. So then you kind of have to jump at it and kick it while going through it. And then, you know, hopefully there's something solid underneath, or you can grab a wall. There's wall jumping in this game, like a gosh darn ninja. And then there's like sometimes spike walls, which if you are the hacky sack hit, then, you know, you have to start the level over. So you got platforms where you can jump on and your sack cannot go through. You've got some that the sack can go through and can sit on, but your character will go through. And then you've got instant death stuff. And basically, every level is a harder and harder arrangement of all these things. And they bring in moving platforms, which you have to get the ball or the sack or whatever. You have to kick it to where it lands on the platform, because it can't go through the platform from underneath, you know? So you end up like really, like it gets so complicated. The goal, of course, is to get the hacky sack into a bright yellow strip that's somewhere on the level. As soon as you hit that, you're instantly done with that level. And then, of course, every level also has a little icon of something. It's usually a little picture of something. And if you hit that with the hacky sack and then get to the goal, then you get that bonus. I'm not sure what they're used for, but this game has a lot of unlockables, so I imagine it may contribute to that. So yeah, I made it through like the first like dozen levels. I want to say maybe close to 20 levels. And then it just started getting to where I was like just almost a Rube Goldberg machine of just like, okay, I got to kick it up here and then I got to jump up and kick it up again. And then I got to bounce off this wall, kick it over this way. It needs to hit the platform exactly so. And then I have to jump, but not up too much. Otherwise, I'm going to hit the spikes. And then I got to kick it twice more over here, wall jump here, kick it twice here, you know. It starts to get like that. All to the, and it's almost humorous in the way that it's just so absurd because all you're doing is kicking a sack towards a yellow line. That's, you know, the whole thing of this game is that it is a challenge puzzle platformer. And I really, every time I started a new level, I was like, oh, ho, that's clever. So, there's definitely something to be said for the level design in this game. As far as unlockable characters, I think I only managed to unlock one, and it was just I couldn't really tell what it was. It was a character with glasses and a different voice. So, I mean, cute is the word. These are very low-res, pixelated characters. Maybe look like they're from an old computer game, like a King's Quest II sort of deal, or something like that. But the action is extremely smooth, and the gameplay is really tight. The controllers are really tight. I didn't really find myself too frustrated, except for the fact that like sometimes I had to hit the Z button while jumping with the B button, and that's always a bad move on a Switch controller.
Oh yeah.
But I mostly got there with the stick and with some. And that's the other thing is that jumping and then using the stick, you know, you might end up doing the claw thing like on Mega Man X.
Oh god!
In order to do dash jumps and stuff, I probably ended up doing that a couple of times. But they give you so many options on the controls. I'm almost sure that was just my fault. In fact, I think one of the shoulder buttons is a jump button. So there's ways around everything. I very much applaud this developer for putting in so many control options, like just without having to even change the layout.
That's it's
just
cool.
Like you can just switch things on the fly because there's only two functions, and so they're like, well, we got like 16 buttons on this thing or whatever.
Might as well use them.
Let's put them to work.
Well, overall, $10 on this one. What do you think of it?
$10. I mean, I definitely got a good amount of money's worth out of it. I mean, puzzle platformers, those are definitely for, you know, somebody who wants to sit there and play through a level 500 times and get so good at it that they can like amaze the two or three people that want to see that. For those people, this is a definite solid entry. You'll find plenty of challenge here and plenty of stuff to do and plenty of things to get good at and be impressive about. For the casual gamer, it's pretty good. The learning curve is pretty, it's not very steep, so you'll get through many levels, until you're pretty much forced to get good. But getting good wasn't a bad process. I didn't really find myself raging out at this one too much, so quite liked it.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's a buy it if you're into this sort of puzzle platformer.
Sounds good. That was a lot of games.
That was 5 games.
5 games in one shot. I think that's the most any single person has done on one of these weekend shows, or the, I guess, weekday shows.
Yeah, and I think I was complaining to you about not giving me something on the Switch earlier, too.
Yeah,
you were like, you have 5 games. I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
Now I your slate's fairly right. Open.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gonna load you back up.
Excellent. Looking forward to it.
Chris,
more farts, more hacky sacks.
I will get you as many fart games as possible.
Perfect.
Chris, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
I think farts and hacky sacks pretty much does it.
Yeah, it does. All right, next game to talk about is called Phantom Doctrine, developed by Creative Forge Games, published by Good Shepherd Entertainment, released August 14th on Steam and PS4, August 24th on Xbox One for $39.99. The year's 1983, the world teeters on the verge of destruction as the Cold War tightens its icy grip. East or West, trust no one, question everything. The fate of humanity rests in your hands as you pit spy versus spy in tactical Phantom Doctrine. Checking this one out, Royal Sefton, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am doing good as well.
I have a strange sense of deja vu, though, as I answer that question.
It's weird. It's like we did this before.
Yeah, and recently, I might add.
I know, like 2 minutes ago.
Good times, good times.
Indeed. So, Phantom Doctrine, how's this game?
Yeah, so it is like espionage XCOM or spy XCOM. That's kind of what it's been billed as. And so it's in a Cold War early 80s setting, as you read the synopsis. And you position your units on a grid and take turns trying to infiltrate, retrieve information, and extract, hopefully without attracting too much attention. So there's an emphasis on not being seen. Espionage. Right. So it plays not dissimilar from something like XCOM. You position your units, you give them cover. There are an assortment of enemy units, some of which are quote high ranking. As you get closer to some of these enemy units, they can notice you and sound the alarm, but you begin more or less, you know, with some kind of disguise. So you may not be immediately obvious to them. So as long as you work or along the outskirts of the map, or you just avoid close contact with any of these enemy units on patrol, you can get in relatively unscathed, but you'll have to disarm traps or security systems to get into where you need to go, or you may actually have to do takedowns. So there's not only just the emphasis of not being seen, but there's also an interesting tactical layer to the game when you start doing these sorts of like Russian takedown or a breach where you coordinate multiple units to take down one room.
That sounds awesome.
It does. And when I started out, I wasn't very good at the breach, so sometimes I would run in with guns out, kick down doors, run to the middle of the room, and not do anything. Surprise! We're here! And
now what?
Yeah. So the game has...
Oh, you have guns. Shit.
Oh, yeah, you guys are armed too. Oops. That's a turn wasted. So yeah, the one of the interesting things about this game is that there is virtually no probability aspect to it. Instead, it has this, I want to say it's called awareness is the attribute, that you have this awareness meter, and essentially if you have full awareness, it is a certainty that what you want to do will happen. If that means taking somebody down by a headshot, you know, 6 squares away, if you have full awareness, you kill them. May leave you exposed to somebody else. Basically, you kind of trade awareness for your ability to keep cover and avoid getting hurt. Mm. Yeah, so you got to plan very carefully. It's easy to get smoked in this. And, you know, my familiarity with XCOM is very limited, but as I recall, you make a few mistakes and it's pretty much an insta-kill type scenario. Same thing applies here. So the game can be very rough, very unforgiving too. That
sounds like
said,
that adds to the charm and the difficulty, though.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And there are various tweaks you can make to the difficulty as well as you go up. You know, I just played it on, I didn't want to say normal or medium, whatever the default is if you've played a turn-based game before. There's an easy mode, there's a hard mode, or whatever.
I play on easy because I suck.
I sometimes go back and choose easy on a lot of games after I realize I'm getting my butt handed to me, but it depends. This is one of those cases where I tried to stick it out on the normal or medium level as much as I could. So one of the reviews that I had read about the game when I was checking out, you know, kind of just comp shopping how other people liked or disliked the game, some folks were saying you can get fairly late into the game and develop a system with some of the perks you develop that allow you to take down every level very easily with some cleaners. Didn't encounter that myself, but I also was probably not as good at the game as the reviewer in question. Yeah. So, yeah, there's always another way to skin a cat with something like this. But it also can be a little bit of a, I don't know. I mean, it's not all roses. There are some things about the game that I have to confess I did not like.
Like what?
So one of the biggest things that really just kind of struck me funny, and I know it was a release version, it wasn't a preview version, so I was kind of surprised by this. Could have also just been my Xbox, but there were a lot of stutters and freezes whenever I was changing camera angles. Or even when I would try to get people into position, it felt like there was a lack of responsiveness sometimes, some lag. Hmm. And I don't know if it was like an optimization issue or something that'll be fixed in a later update, but it happened a lot.
There's
kind of problematic
to go off course a bit. There is a chance it could be your console. I reviewed a game 2 weeks ago or so, a Warhammer game, and on my one console it ran flawlessly. Like there were no mm-hmm. hiccups, there was nothing wrong. On my other console it was very laggy and stuttery, so there is a chance it could just be your console acting up mm-hmm. or being funny.
Yeah, to be fair, that could be it. You know, if my experience isn't alone, I'd assume it's probably going to be fixed in an update. It also has some really, really solid, pathfinding tracing type stuff. When you go to move your units into position, it'll draw a very clear line of where they're going. You just gotta pay attention because if you plot a course, say around the corner of a building, just make sure you see that the line is not drawing through one window and in and out another. Cause if you're trying to avoid being seen, you don't want to dive into one window and dive out another window, which sometimes it will offer to do for you. So you just gotta be careful where you press go.
I'm just imagining a spy sneaking around, diving through a closed window so the window just shatters. He walks around a garbage can and dives out another window.
Ninja stealth.
And just the people inside just staring at him like, who the fuck was that?
Yeah. Also had a problem where you try to set up folks for a breach. Like I said, you end up getting into this room. You know, don't draw your guns at all. It's a great tactic. But I found that sometimes the application of these tactics did not go as planned. So I end up in this room, guns drawn, and all my units converge in one spot, and they're suddenly surrounded by all these other armed enemies that now notice them, and they never I never fired a shot. You know, just totally screwed myself up. So there's some control-based challenges with the game, I think. And the tutorial is a little fast, so you don't really get to drink it all in the first time. Cool tutorial, though, and does illustrate one of the things I thought was really neat is that you can activate sleeper cells with a phrase, and you end up with these like sleeper units that suddenly are on your side, but they've otherwise been implanted in the enemy base, shall we say.
That is cool as fuck.
I thought that was pretty slick. And as you go through, you can also identify these spots to grab additional intel, and they're kind of like bonus points. They're optional. And as long as you don't get caught, you can take some quick pictures and then get a move on or raid the lockers for additional equipment. It's pretty cool. So there is a lot to like about this game. I think for me, it's just there are a few rough edges, you know, a few things that could deserve a little additional polish. But on the whole, it's an interesting game, and I think that it's going to be kind of a sleeper hit.
Nice. So rough edges aside, $40 on this one. What do you think of it?
If I was more into the turn-based thing, I would say it's a buy it. It kind of falls more to try it for me because it is kind of a unique flavor. There aren't a lot of games quite like it. So See, if I were setting the price, I'd probably say 30 is a good deal. But if you are definitely, you know, looking for turn-based strategy and something different, $40 is pretty fair. There's a lot of game in there too.
Awesome. Sounds good. Royal, it is always a pleasure having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts?
Ninja stealth.
All right. Finally, tonight, we're bringing in our good friend, Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty all right. I came on here kind of tired before we started recording. Let me start talking about Miyamoto, and it just got better. So I'm lively and awake and actually doing all right. I picked up Dragon Quest XI. I don't know when I'm going to play the damn thing, but the dopamine hit that came from buying it at the store was worth it. It'll have a great place on the shelf in shrink wrap.
See, I'm a filthy, filthy hypocrite with this game because everyone was talking about it. And I'm like, yeah, but I really wanted it to launch on the Switch because, you know, it's coming to the Switch eventually. And I was dead set on waiting for the Switch version. And then Chris Taylor was talking about how much he wanted the collector's edition of the game. And I saw the collector's edition on the Square store. I'm like, man, this is really expensive for what you get. But that shouldn't surprise me because it's Square Enix and they always overcharge for their shit on
what
the store.
What do they get for this thing now?
The collector's edition?
Yeah, because I fought off the urge to buy, so I didn't even look at it.
Let me pull it up quick. I know it has like a 2-disc soundtrack. Here it is, pulling it up because I am lazy and I'm just going to Google all this shit instead. It comes with a 2-disc soundtrack, the Symphonic Suite. It comes with a map of Erdria, if that's how it's pronounced. The game, obviously, a large format hardback 128-page art book. So that should be cool. And then the big thing for me, a steelbook, because I am a whore for steelbooks.
I do love steelbooks.
And then some bonus, like seeds, skill seeds and shit like that for the game.
Oh, but, DLC.
I was dead set on not getting the game. And then we had a couple extra bucks and the wife was like, just go ahead and get it. So I fucking ordered it.
And now you shall be questing with dragons. I mean, at the end of the day, even a mediocre Dragon Quest game is a great game. Like, I'm not saying this is mediocre. I don't know shit about it. I don't even know how the skill systems work or anything. I kept myself intentionally in the dark. But even a mediocre Dragon Quest game is a good game. So I feel like you ain't waste your money.
True.
But
I wouldn't know yet because despite paying like $12 for shipping from the Square store, I'm not getting it until Thursday.
That surprisingly doesn't surprise me. I think I've ordered from them once for a collector's edition, and I had a similar experience of it taking forever. The only benefit was that I had, just like we pretty much do now, I had so much to play that the wait didn't matter. I was like, it'll show up. I got like 20 other things to do. Can you recall, I bet you honestly could, because I know you get really excited for a lot of games, but can you recall the last game you ordered that you were excited to play on release day? Not to have it, but to actually utilize the thing you bought, and it took forever to show up.
That showed up late? I don't know, there have been a couple in the past. I can't recall off the top of my head. I think Assassin's Creed last year was one of them.
Ah, that was a pretty recent one, so I think that counts. Yeah, so I'm like that now where I'm always like, oh, I ordered this thing, it'll show up. And it's like, now I don't even have Amazon Prime anymore, which I'm still contemplating returning to. It's like, hey, when is this game going to show up? You got to wait 8 days. 8 days? And I guess I better play my freaking Wii U again, which I actually booted up. I opened a pro controller for the Wii U. Opened. Wow. Never used. Opened it for the first time on Saturday. And I have another one upstairs that I never used. It's Why? Ridiculous. My brother came by because he didn't realize that Super Smash Brothers was already out. Like, as in the one they're hyping up, like, coming soon, Smash Brothers Ultimate, or whatever the freaking title is. And it's like, now we got the Splatoon kid and that Belmont dude. And he's like, oh my god, this game is going to be amazing. I'm like, you do know the game already exists, right? They're just adding a bunch of stuff to it. He's like, what are you talking about? I was like, the game's been out for like 5 years. It's been real. I've been sitting on it. No one plays it with me. So he freaked out, and him and my brother, another brother of mine, and my nephew came over on like Sunday or Monday, and we played Smash Brothers. We didn't do it. We only did like two players, like two humans and then two computers, because I still didn't think to go open up the other controller for some dumb reason. But it was interesting to sit here and watch. Oh my God, I had no idea this game existed. I'm like, yeah, it's
because it was on the Wii U and no one gave a shit about it.
Pretty much, poor freaking Wii U. I still stand by my belief that system got the Rear Admiral shaft, and I do not stand by the belief that something as dumb as the name is why it didn't sell. I refuse. I'm okay with people saying they ain't like the games on it. That's a personal opinion. You're allowed to not like stuff. But to say the game would have sold, the system would have sold much better if they called it something that didn't have Wii in it, I call bullshit. That's not possible.
I really do think the name caused a lot of confusion with it, and that was part of the problem.
But it's like, think of it like from this perspective. Okay. All right, so there's a Wii, and there's, I know we're like, we gotta do reviews. It's like, no, this is important.
We are shit. So off track right now.
As we should be. There's a Wii, and there's a Wii U. Think of it as if it was like a PlayStation or an Xbox and an Xbox, or 360 and Xbox One. Same logic. It would be the same thing. So the game comes out. You want to play that game. You go to the store to buy it, and you think it'll work on your Wii because it's for the Wii U, and the Wii U is just an unnecessary extra screen for your already working Wii at home. Two things are going to happen. You're going to try to buy it, and the clerk will tell you that doesn't work on the Wii U, or the Wii is only for the Wii U. Do you have a Wii U? And at that point, the person will go, no, we have a Wii. They'll learn their lesson, and they'll figure, oh, shit, because we got to get the new Wii U then if we want to play these new games. And they'll either upgrade or they'll ignore it. The alternative, which, if that happened, if anybody's listening and this has happened to you, please write into the show, because goddamn, how? They take the game home, they put it in their Wii, and it doesn't work. They wonder why their Wii is broken. So they put another Wii game in there. It works. Why does my Wii Sports work? And this Super Mario U game doesn't. I don't understand. Is my system broken? And then it goes down to a weird rabbit hole there where they call Nintendo and shit. And Nintendo has to tell them that a black box with a big screen that retails for more than the original Wii costs is somehow not the same system as their old 4-year-old Wii. Like, I just can't. I can't. If it's not like a senior citizen at the old folks' home, I can't fathom that thing not selling because they took Wii and put a U on it. I mean, everybody else does it. PlayStation does PS with a number after it. They just add a number, and that's enough. Xbox throws like an acronym Xbox, then the 360, then the One. And I guess I'll admit there were some dumbasses with that one, too, where it was like, the One, is it a remake of the original? Is it just the Xbox again, but with a One in the front? No, it's a new damn system. I don't know why they gave it that name, but it's clearly new. Stop being
There's a stupid. Lot of stupid people out there, man. A lot of stupid people.
Yes, I can't deny that. People were burning their damn sneakers. I just had to say that because I stand by my love or hate the situation. I'm not burning my own goddamn property. I'm going to sell it. I'm going to donate it to charity. I ain't destroying my own shit, okay? If you hate them that much, go to Champ Sports and just start smashing some shoes. You don't own those shoes. That's the process. Destroy them. Destroy unsold shoes. You might go to jail for it. Guess what? That's a fucking protest. You're doing something that is illegal to make a point. That's a protest. People are fucking dumb. Just name this episode. People are fucking dumb. And that'll be good. But
it's,
don't.
It's tempting, but I'm going to guess that the people that that we do reviews for wouldn't appreciate that as the show title.
That's what I was going to say. Don't do that. But man, it'd be nice if we could do that. Because, oh my God, people are dumb. But we should talk about the games. It's about the games.
Yeah, we should talk about them. Speaking of Nintendo systems, you got a couple of Switch games to talk about and a Steam game. So let's kick things off with Hyper Light Drifter Special Edition, developed by Heart Machine and AB Light, published by AB Light, released September 6th on the Switch for $19.99. Drift up in a mysterious world to find a cure for a deadly illness, traverse a dark, detailed land with vicious enemies and secrets abound. Brunel, tell us about this one.
Well, I'm glad that the description doesn't say much about it because I'm not going to either, because this game I like and yet feel weird about the fact that aside from what you just said, that's pretty much all they give you. The game starts out with a weird fever dream and your guy's coughing up blood on a cliff, and then you wake up in a bed in a town and you're left to do what you want. And that's kind of awesome in its own way. So this is an action adventure game. I don't want to call it an RPG. I call it an action adventure game, more kind of like a Zelda-y game, but lighter than that. In that you're transported to this mysterious world, and they give you no direction. You just kind of figure things out. Like, you'll walk, like, for example, aside from tutorials telling you how to put a button doing a thing or use this to fire your gun, there's no text that I've come across in the entire game. It's just images and, like, Banjo-Kazooie-esque, like, garble speak. And that should annoy me, but it doesn't. It's charming. And you pretty much walk across, like, for example, you walk to a guy in a back alley, he'll be lying there, you walk up to him, and he'll show a bunch of pictures that seem to tell a story of why he's lying in the back alley. But since you know nothing about the world you're experiencing and exploring, you kind of have to piece it together yourself. Like, why was he running? Who the hell are those people? Why does one of them have a pink head? I don't understand. Whatever. But much of the game is like this. You'll talk to a guy in the woods, the map will come up, and you'll see a skull on the upper left corner or upper right corner or whatever. And all you know is skull means bad, and I should probably go break it. And that's cool. So what ends up happening is you go out into the world, you get free roam to go in one of like four directions from the central hub, and you end up starting out with three abilities, which kind of end up being your only abilities, just with slight enhancement as you play through the game. You have a sword slash, which pretty much going to be your main means of attack. You can destroy objects and attack enemies with it. You have a gun, which you hold down the left trigger to ready, and then you use the thumbstick to kind of move around and aim it, and the right stick to shoot. What that means is that this is not a running gunner. If you're using the gun, you have to be a safe distance away from your opponent in firing it. It has a limited amount of bullets. And what I like about this is that you don't have to find ammo to use the gun. You just destroy shit to charge it. So whereas in Zelda, you would cut grass to find rupees occasionally or hearts, in this game, you just destroy everything and you get bullets back into your gun. It just charges it, which is great. It makes it so that you don't have, it's like you still have to manage the resource, but it's not as stressful as I got to find a bullet. It's just break shit or even kill guys and you'll get it. And then the last ability you get is the dash, which I guess is where the hyperlight comes in, because it's kind of like a speedy dash that you get, and you use it to cross over terrain and to evade enemies on occasion. And I'm going to tell you something, you fucking need it, because this game is rough. It is not easy. It will make you work for those wins, and you will enjoy working for them. There's a lot of situations where you'll walk into a room, and the room will kind of seal itself off, though not always. Sometimes it'll seal, other times it'll just be in the open, and guys will just show up. And it's rarely one or two dudes. It's usually a fair number of enemies at once. And they do not, even from the beginning, they do not allow you to really button mash to succeed. You have to be very intentional with your strikes. So, for example, you have a three-sword basic strike combo. 1, 2, 3. If you go through, the third strike does more damage than the first two. But when you do the third swing, you're slightly immobilized because it's kind of like putting all your force into the swing, and now you have to kind of come back from it to move. And if you miss that strike, or if you're hitting a guy that can't be stunned and you go into it and not kill him, that will leave you wide open to get your ass beat, and it will happen that way. So you don't want to risk that. You want to be mindful and intentional with every strike you make. If you take damage, you have a total of 5 hit points. If you run out of those hit points, you will die and get kicked back to the nearest checkpoint, I believe. I did not die yet. I don't intend to. but you get health packs that you can find in the world. And if you use the health packs, you can pretty much heal yourself. But they're very sparse and very limited. So you can't just be like kind of liberal, just like chunk them. It's okay. I'll just battle attrition. You can't have a battle attrition. Now, one thing that I do kind of think is interesting about this game as well is it has a bit of a, I don't want to say roguelike element, but it's got a sort of like, okay, I won't even go with it. I'm not going to go with comparison. I'm going to tell you what the hell it is. It's better that way. So as you explore and kill stuff, it stays dead. As you find items, they stay acquired, and you just progress throughout. Let's say you're getting to the point where you're about to die, or you want to go back to town to check for something. You can warp back to checkpoints to kind of respawn back at a convenient location, but every enemy that you killed and every health kit that you found will come back to the map, and they can be picked up again, and the enemies have to be killed again. So you could go through a run of an environment and just get rocked, but in the process, kind of learn how the enemies operate, and then work back to the main hub or to a warp point and then do it again with the knowledge you took in, you learned going in the first time, and do a much better job of it. And there's something kind of satisfying. I did that a couple of times, like, oh crap, I need to go back to the store and buy some upgrades, or look at the upgrades and then be surprised that I can't afford them because I'm freaking broke, and then go back out and suffer and struggle. Now, upgrades, you say, yes, I said that. There aren't a ton of them, but they're still cool and they are there to buy. Now, the upgrades are also the game's incentive to get you to explore the world, because, or one of the incentives, because like I said, there is no, you don't increase your health bar. But what you do discover, in addition to like the keys and doors unlockables to progress to the maps, you find little chips. And for every 4 chips, you get 1 credit. And items and upgrades end up costing between 2 to like 3 or 4 credits to get. So, for example, there's a bigger sword that I really wanted to get. That bigger sword costs 3 credits. What that means is that I have to find 12 unlockables or 12 hidden chips to get that upgrade. So you're going to be exploring the map because you're going to want those upgrades. And you're going to be getting your ass beat as you try to do it, because enemies are jerks. And you're not going to know how to beat everybody as a Mixmaster from the very start. But it is fun to attempt it every step of the freaking way. You earn your way through it. And when you get to bosses, oh, fucking forget about it. They have it. They evolve. They are battles of a legitimate attrition, like as in fighting for long periods of time. Well, I won't say long because you might be thinking 30 minutes, but you'll be fighting for a number of what feels like long minutes, trying to be perfect. And then the enemy will change his attack style. You got to adapt to that. Or he might summon some dudes. You got to adapt to that. So a lot of adaptation that takes place. And honestly, if you die, you'll just feel as though you need to go back and try again with more knowledge. Coming back with the knowledge you gained from that last beatdown. And to me, I can't speak for everybody, but to me, those are the most satisfying boss battles and games I come across. I'm tired of this whole just give me the win shit. I understand some people want a narrative and they want to just kind of push through and see what's going on. You don't have time for that. But really, if you're having fun, then what's wrong with a failure here and there? It just makes the victory that much more satisfying. And quite frankly, you're going to experience that with this. It is a quality game. The world that they created is fantastic. It's moments where I'm still wondering why this guy is sick. You'll be walking around the map and out of nowhere with your full health, you'll just stop walking and start coughing blood. And you're like, what's wrong with him? Is he dying? Is he sick? What's the deal? Because while you did say just now in your description that he's kind of sick and there's a problem, game-wise, you don't fucking know that. You just see it. There's nothing saying, and the hero has heart disease. It's just, he's just sick. You don't know why. Why is my dude coughing up blood? Maybe I can find a way to cure him, and maybe that's the motivation of the game. Maybe the motivation is to find the origin of this big mouth robo bitch. I don't know. I hope that doesn't make the providers angry. But point is, this game is really cool. I am actually kind of glad that I've never played it, because on Rhythm and Pixels, my friend Rob, he loves Hyper Light Drifter. He played it for the first time back in February or March or something. And he was raving about how much he likes the game. And my mindset was like, whatever. It doesn't look all that great to me. Whatever. I got other stuff to play. I'll deal with it later. I almost regret saying that now, except for the fact that by having avoided it this long, I could review it for the show with my first time experience and gush about it, to the point of saying, if you have never played this game before, you need to remedy that shit. You need to get on it. You need to play this game. It is worth your time. I'm jumping ahead of myself, but
I don't even need to ask you anymore. You just go right into it.
I have to. It just feels like it has to happen. It's like, this game is quality meat. It is worth your time. It has Disaster Piece music in it. And if you don't know who Disaster Piece music is, you need to learn. And you'll learn by playing this game or watching It Follows or playing Fez. Point is, his music is great and it does a great job of adding to the world that you're experiencing in Hyper Light Drifter. The graphics are great. The fluid motion is great. The gunplay, the swordplay is great. And then you upgrade and you're even doing better gunplay and better swordplay. This is just quality shit.
So I'm guessing you like this one, huh?
I liked it quite a bit, yes. Well,
then for $20, what's your official verdict?
It should be bought, and it should be caressed and appreciated.
And if fun thing here, if people want to hear more about Hyper Light Drifter, we actually had an interview with Alex from Heart Machine way back on episode 208. So if you want to hear more about the game, go check out that episode.
yes, hitting that Wayback Machine, it'll be worth your time. I might have to go take a look at that.
Yeah, you should. There's a couple of good interviews on that episode. So if people want to hear some good chats, 208, go do it.
Hotel room 208. Gotcha.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Earthworms, developed by All Those Moments, published by Sanka, released August 24th on the Switch for $7.99. Feel the thrill of horror mixed with a dose of humor, beauty, ugliness, and weirdness in the surreal world of Earthworms. Brought to Switch specially for you to delve into, play as Daniel White, a private detective endowed with parapsychic abilities, and solve investigations with the help of his visions. Soon, what he thinks is a typical missing person case will lead him to a global conspiracy. Purnell, what is Earthworms?
Earthworms is very strange. I got this freaking game. So, Earthworms is an adventure game, kind of pretty much point and click, where it starts out with you being in this guy's office, and a guy or a man or a costume Sasquatch comes into your office and says, I have a, basically just hands you a picture of a lost person and pretty much says you have a case. And your guy goes, I need to find my keys. And that's your game's tutorial to say this is a point and click adventure. You find your car keys by going through the motions of searching things and learning how the game controls and the inventory system and all that, and then you leave and you go to this mysterious island. That's the intro of the game. Now, the quirk is that he's susceptible to paranormal visions, which are supposed to assist him in his cases. But I will have to say, before I actually go into the game proper, that while they do come up in the form of imagery when you walk into certain environments or when you search certain objects, and I believe they're meant to link different locations or objects to connect, to make one connecting, you know, point of information or stream of conscious, I never once utilized it. I never once got the gist of how it works, and I just kind of ignored it, aside from like some flavor, like, oh crap, that face has no eyeballs, why the fuck is that? And whatever. Let me just keep looking. So the game, outside of that component, is a interesting point and click game. Again, like, you walk around, and as you explore this island, you'll come across different like objects on the ground or locations. And whenever you walk and click on something, Daniel has an interesting little quirk or comment that he'll make about, which honestly I kind of laughed. It's got a very film noir gumshoe quality to it, like, oh, baby won't need those fish cakes no more or something like that. I don't know why he would say it, but he says it and it works. But it's pretty much exploring. You'll come across objects, which you'll then take to the occasional, like, civilian on this island. And even they are just kind of weird. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not even going to say it because obviously it's spoiling it, because it's a short game. So I can't say a ton about the game. But you'll go talking to people. You'll wonder, are they human? Are these people paranormal agents? Are they all hiding a crazy secret? Or is it just that one guy, the guy dressed like a fish? I don't know. there's no one dressed like a fish, by the way, but the guy, that Sasquatch guy, is totally in this freaking game. He looks weird. But as you walk around, you'll find objects. Sometimes you need to fuse the objects together using the inventory system to create the necessary object to advance the puzzles. Every once in a while, you'll need to go up to a person and ask them questions. Sometimes those questions can involve in changing the ending to the game, because there's more than one ending to the game. But ultimately, you'll be talking to people, exploring locations, and trying to resolve riddles, and trying to figure out why the hell there are tentacles coming out of the woods. I do like the fact that every time you go to a different location, there's like a cool like vignette that comes up and explains like just something about the location, like a nice little description about where you're about to go, the next screen you're going to, for so to speak. And I honestly kind of enjoy the world as I explored it. I liked looking at things. I like the art style that they use for it. I even like the music. It's got a very weird, creepy music style throughout the entire game. But one thing that kind of bugged me, though I'll admit this is probably a personal thing and not something everyone else will experience. Have you ever played an adventure game where you solve puzzles, but you don't always feel like you intuitively solved it?
Yeah.
I get that vibe from this game sometimes. Like, I'll feel every once in a while it'll make sense. Like, give this guy this thing, because clearly he needs it. It'll shut him right down or something. But other times, you're just kind of fumbling. Like, I guess that worked. All right, whatever. Moving on. I want to see what's next. But there have definitely been times where I didn't feel as though, I felt more like I was kind of blind driving than moving with a purpose, just hoping to come across the thing that would set me forward or move me forward. But that may not be a thing for everybody. And I can say that I enjoyed what I experienced within this game, despite that weird quirk, because again, I like the art style. I like the music. I like the crazy quips from the main character. And I actually kind of even like the resolution to the mystery too, because you go there for one reason and then you eventually just kind of stop caring about that once you resolve it. Like, I'm still going to keep working, whatever. Like, it's like almost like half the game is just solving the mystery you came there for. And the rest is just, what the fuck's going on? And it's kind of cool too, because imagine if the game came to the point you solved the mystery that you went there for, and the guy just like, all right, time to go home. And you met the guy, the player's like pushing the bus, like, no, you're not. Nope. That's why I'm kind of like, the main character does the same thing where he's like, well, I'm going to keep looking around because this is some weird shit. And quite frankly, I want to resolve it. No one's paying me for this, but I have to know.
It's like, yeah, the game sounds pretty batshit crazy.
It is. It's pretty batshit crazy. It's very crazy. It's just like, I think it ends up being crazier in the sense that at least early on in the game, you're seeing all this weird shit, but the people that you encounter don't seem to acknowledge anything. Like, you would figure if you're seeing tentacles coming out of the woods and you go to talk to the guy whose house is in front of the location where the tentacles are coming out of the woods, that he might say, hey, stranger, see those fucking tentacles coming out of the woods? Don't touch them. They're creepy. Doesn't happen. This day is like, I'm just here fishing. Fishing's cool. You know,
it's a normal day for me with tentacles in the woods. Nothing strange.
It's so weird. And I like weird. So it was right up my alley. I was a fan. I enjoyed it. I feel like I'm getting to that point where I might need to outright say I need to request another bad game to cleanse my palate.
Oh,
because this wasn't it. This is definitely, I think, at least to try it. Because again, it might skeeve people for the puzzle situation depending on how they might approach them. But I think the game is succinct. And how much does it retail for?
$8.
Oh yeah, it's not that. It's not bad. You'll spend more to go see Black Panther, which I did recently see, and that's old. What's a newer movie? The Meg. Yeah, you'd spend that much going to see The Meg, and this game has tentacles. That has a shark. I go for the tentacles.
Win-win, really.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you pay $8, you get a quality, it's not a very long game, but with the multiple endings, you could probably see yourself coming back and going for the other ones if you appreciate it enough. But even for the one run, the experience of just kind of exploring this island and seeing what the developers created here is pretty cool. And this level of quirk doesn't come along all that often.
Nice. Sounds good.
Oh, shucks. Thank you.
One final game to talk about tonight called Death Fungeon, developed by Ritual Games, published by Grab the Games. It released August 17th on Steam for $1.99. A puzzle platform game with both stealth and parkour elements. Use your wits, cunning, and agility to escape this deadly prison. Pernell, what the hell is Death Fungeon?
A poor naming attempt when they could have seriously gone with Dungeon Fungeon.
Dungeon Fungeon.
I kid you not. Since I started reviewing this game, I keep instinctively calling it Dungeon Fungeon. I can't stop.
Maybe they'll rename it based on your suggestion.
Or they'll just say I'm a crackpot and just walk away.
I mean, you are.
This is true. I'm not going to deny. I mean, that's one of my best quirks. But as for the game, only for $1.99, you said. Yep. This game, there's some meat here. It's not even very... It's not... a deep game. It's not you're not unlocking moves or shit. You know what you can do from the very beginning. You are a little elf hobo guy who's locked in a dungeon. He can hide in a pot and he can jump. That is all you can do. And that's all you need to do. So what ends up happening is you're running through this dungeon trying to get out of it. It's a series of screens. Like, you go from screen to screen, and each screen sets you up with a situation. There will be an entrance and an exit. And throughout, you'll see guards every once in a while. And these guards are kind of like large orc-looking guys who seem like they don't want to be there, but they're there because they want to eat you for some reason. And you're trying to avoid them for the most part. Sometimes they'll be sleeping. Sometimes they'll just be kind of pacing. And other times they'll just be standing still looking left to right. And your goal is to evade them because you cannot hurt them in any way. There's no means to do so. So as you're moving, if they see you, one of them will blow a horn, and everyone that's in the room will be alerted to your presence and will come after you. If you make noise by doing something like, say, pushing a block off of a ledge or something, you'll startle them, and they'll go, "What's that?" Kind of like Metal Gear Solid-esque, like, "What's that?" And we'll start doing a pace to try to find you, which sometimes is a requirement for a puzzle. You'll have to make a noise to make them start looking around for you. But for the most part, you are evading them by running, jumping, sometimes bouncing off their sleeping stomachs to get extra hops to reach higher ledges, and you're trying to avoid them. What I like about the game, though, is that even with the... Oh, I forgot. Also, you can hide. Like I said, you can hide in the pot sometimes, and if they don't see you, they'll walk past you while you're hiding in a pot, and you can climb out and run away. What I like about this game is, though, they give you a very limited amount of abilities. The game, on each world you go to, adds a new gimmick to make the platforming change up in a different way. Easy example is the second stage, whereas the first stage, the whole thing is just getting used to the game. So you're jumping, you're pushing blocks, and you are wall jumping, which I forgot. You can wall jump in this game. But the second level, once they figure, oh, this guy has a handle of how the game works, now you've got buzzsaws, trampolines, and collapsing blocks. Blocks that crumble underneath your feet, and you can't stay on them. And if the debris from the blocks land on a guy, you'll alert them, like, oh, there's somebody in here. I just got hit with falling debris for some reason. So that's kind of cool. And as it doesn't take long for the platforming to get pretty rough. Like, I'm really good at platforming, and by the third world, I was doing a lot of dying. A lot of dying. I think my death count just for world two was like 97.
Shit.
But it's got that addictive die and respawn on the screen you died on mentality that things like Super Meat Boy got remade really popular. And you don't even feel like you're losing out on the deaths. You just want to try again. I enjoyed this game a lot. It's not complicated, but I feel like it's one of those games, like, if you're looking for something that just to do, you'll enjoy doing this. I like seeing a situation and resolving the situation. And when I'm looking for a pick up and play, it's even nicer when I have limited abilities, but it's still a challenge to resolve the situation with the very limited set of abilities. I don't have to walk in and remember all the options I've got at my disposal. Just hide and jump. That's it. And
plus, on top of all of that, it's $2.
Yeah, it's only freaking $2. And in addition to the running through the stages, they still have a collectible gimme in this game. You can collect. Every level has hidden treasure chests in it, but they're not truly hidden. Like, there's no, like, I haven't come across anywhere it's like, you got to walk through this hidden wall or something. They're always kind of out there somewhere. You have to figure out how to get to them. And it's just little treasure chests with gems in them, and the game tells how many treasure chests you found in the level. So I'm a completist, so I had to get every chest I found. No questions asked. But that's another little thing to say, hey, rather than just blitz through all the levels, also stop and sniff the roses and try to figure out how to get those treasure chests, too. But this... I honestly feel like I would want to call it a buy, but by virtue of the price, you know what I have to call it.
Let's hear it.
It's a fuck it, why not? Buy this damn thing. Just fucking buy the game. Why not? What's the worst that could happen?
You're short $2, whatever.
Exactly. But I bet you'll like it. Just got to be down with platformers. That's about the gist of the only requirement.
Sounds good.
Guten Tag.
Indeed. Pernell, always good having you on. Always good having everybody on the show. That is it for this episode. Pernell, do you have any fun final words to end the show?
Tip your waitresses and waiters. Cook more and don't eat out as much. Rain sucks, but we need it to live. Clean your stovetops and gutter drains.
Man, you're covering all the bases tonight.
That was all from this week for me. Like, it all just had to get lumped in one shot.
Damn.
I had a lot of lessons this week.